Hi, my name is Cliff Roach, and I'm an alcoholic, and I appreciate being invited here. I love this meeting. It's one of the great meetings of AA that I know of. I was especially delighted tonight. Bob D. actually came and picked me up at the airport. I had thought he was a disassociated voice that called me every year. Why don't you come talk for us? Where's Bob? He's gone. And I love Mesquite. I spent 2 weeks there one afternoon. Kim, that was a terrific talk. Thank you very, very much. If you're new tonight, and there were a lot of new ones here tonight, you don't have to listen to me. Good night. Because she told you exactly what happens. If you want to belong here, you belong here. If you don't want to belong here, you never could belong no matter what if you don't want it. She really nailed it, I thought. My birthday is the 13th of January, 1970. So a week or so ago, I had 37 years. I know I look much too young to have that. Much too young. And Kim was talking about how to be a loser and then how to be a winner. We kind of went at it differently. She went to AA and was an NA, and I went to AA and was brilliant. I was an intellectual giant, and I never met. Oh, by the way, I knew John when he was a newcomer. He got sober in my area, and one of the sickest newcomers I have ever seen. A lot of people lost money over there on him, I'll tell you. Cost me a few bucks, too, I'll tell you for sure. But when I came to AA, I came the first time in 1965. And I came because it just seemed like a good idea. I was drunk all the time and having a hell of a time. And I remember I went to my first meeting, and I thought, what am I doing here? These people are retarded. I mean, they seem to have the collective IQ of an orange. And of course, in 65, I was to the left of Mao Zedong, My hero was Eldridge Cleaver, who was a black militant terrorist. That was my hero. My philosophy was burn it down or blow it up. I didn't get a shit witch, And Eldridge had given this great speech few months earlier, and I was there screaming and yelling. It was great. He was talking about the prison system, about how they're always trying to rehabilitate him. He says, you know what they'd never known? He had never been habilitated. And you can't rehabilitate somebody who's never been habilitated. That's how I felt in the A&A. It seemed like at some point in your wretched lives, you'd been okay. But drinking and interfering with you came here and got rehabilitated. I was nuts when I was 4 years old. I was crazy. We lived in Venice, California. We lived right on the beach. And I'd stand there, 4 years old, wait for a car to come. And when a car would come, I'd go. And like a little soldier at his post, I'd wait for another one. Spent the day there. People come driving along. Look at the little boy. What the hell is that? I didn't know how to do this yet. Boy, if I'd have known how to do that's what I would have done. But I've been nuts my whole life. I've always lived on the edge of psychosis. Just one step either way and it would be all over. And so when people like me drink, it's good. For me, not for you. Because I'm also very violent. So anyway, I met this woman in college right after World War II. I had just won World War II. And she was down on Skid Row looking for an alcoholic to abuse her. And a real potential Al-Anon, if there ever was one. And we entered this 20-year suicide pact together. And I don't know any others here, but We had the dual disease. We had alcoholism and Catholicism. Consequently, we had a kid every 9 months and 20 minutes. What it seemed like to me, anyway. Every time I come out of a blackout, what the hell is that? And they're all right when they're little, you know, like kittens. But we had five of them, and they grew. And the older they got, the sicker they got. The weirder they got. God knows the weirder she got. I was the head nut. And later on, I became a school teacher. Guy commits felonies and blackouts, becomes a school teacher. Just a hobby, lighten up. But after a number of years, we moved to Oceanside, California. We moved there, I was just talking before the meeting, we moved there in 1961 when it was still a little town, and I got a job there teaching high school at Oceanside High. And I was a good teacher. I loved teaching, I loved the kids loved me, and I was really effective. Somebody asked my wife, my Al-Anon. I always like to introduce her as my Al-Anon. You know how they introduce us? Have you met my alcoholic? Sit up, boy. Sit up. Sit up. Tell them how long you've been sober. Somebody asked my Al-Anon one time why I was such a good high school teacher, and she said, well, he's a very well-educated adolescent. I hate it when they're accurate and cruel. But I was always a macho drinker. A lot of other macho drinkers here tonight. I'm a rough, tough, and hard to bluff. Never won a fight in my life, but I love doing it. I'd rather fight than have sex. That's called step two. Oh, I loved fighting and I loved drinking. And I've always been an alcoholic. First time I ever took a drink, I crossed the invisible line. You know, I've sponsored guys, you know, who drank successfully for years and years and then crossed the line. The first time I swallowed booze, I stepped across the invisible line. I don't know what the hell social drinkers do. I don't like them. I don't trust them. Did you ever drink with those weenies? Come on, you know, you take the cap off, you may say, I'll get it. I just don't trust people like that. I just don't trust them. So always was a macho guy. And so when I was, when we moved to Oceanside, I was in my early 30s, but I still became a surfer dude anyway. Macho guys do that. I surfed until I was 74 years old. Not many people do that. You should have seen me in that last couple of years out there. Kids love me. They say, help Mr. Roach back on his board. There you go. You know. But after I'd been there about a year as a surfer dude, another teacher and I decided we'd open a surf shop there in Oceanside, right on the beach. The mayor of the town gave us this building right on the water, can you imagine? And we loved that place. Can you imagine for two drunks? Right on the beach. We became sunset connoisseurs. We used to watch sunsets every evening. We used to measure them by martinis. I say, it looks like about an 8 tonight. What do you? The best one we ever had, we had a 15 martini sunset. Oh, you should have seen it. It was glorious. The sun and Woody and I went right together. They found us in the morning with sunburned mouths. You remember that? I think that should be on the 20 questions. You ever had a sunburned mouth? Nah, get the hell out of here. You're not ready yet, pal. Come back when you're ready. But anyway, people would come down in the evening and say, I'd like to rent a surfboard. Screw off, Charlie. We're watching the sunset now. But in February of 65, as I told you, I went down to the shop on a Sunday morning. It was freezing cold. I was going to repair a board that had gotten dinged up, and it was a Sunday morning. I had a hangover. Really? Yes. And I was very thirsty. And I went to the refrigerator to see if there was a Coke or something in there. I was not a morning drinker at that time. I was a weekend drinker. I used to take Wednesday off. Get off my back. I'm a weekend drinker. And so anyway, I opened the refrigerator to see if there's a Coke or something in there. And My buddy Woody had been there the night before, and he left maybe this much vodka and a half pint, and there was some orange juice in the refrigerator, and I thought, that would put out the fire. So I mixed up that little dinky drink. This is for the new guys here and gals tonight. Welcome, welcome, welcome. And I drank that little half a shot of vodka in the orange juice, went on about my business, and I'm sanding away on the board there, and that little tiny bit of vodka got in my bloodstream. You know how it'll do? Circulate around. And my mind talked to me. And my mind said, shame on you, shame, shame. That was Woody's booze you drank. Why don't you go down to the liquor store and get old Woody a pint? That's the kind of guy I am. That afternoon, I got Woody a fifth. And I ended up just stupid drunk, resin all over me. And I went home and called Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's how I went to AA the first time. And I got sober then in the January the 13th, 1970. So there's a five-year spill here. And I was an AA loser. If there ever was a loser, it was me, because I had that smirk down, the loser smirk, you know the one? You had to get the head bob right, too. Used to come in the meeting, sit in the last chair in the last row, fold my arms and judge you. And I thought you were all retarded and that I was much too smart to, you know. So I would come to AA for 40 days, then I'd be drunk for 2 years. And that's a slip. Then I'd come to AA for a year, for 30 days, be gone a year and a half, in and out. And one time I came in the afternoon about 4 o'clock. And these four guys quadro-stepped me. You ever been quadro-stepped? They just surrounded me. Just, I got it that day. I had the message. And I went and got my buddy, Big John, who was worse than me, pounded on the door, and John came to the door and said, John, we're alcoholics, we have to go to AA. Big John said, oh, okay. So I led him to the meeting that night and became his sponsor. The next day, we both got drunk, so... But there was a little electrician there in Oceanside, a guy named Bill Blake's been dead now for over 20 years. And he was always, whenever I'd come to a meeting, he would pounce on me. You know, one of those smiling, happy ones that irritate the hell out of you when you're new, when you're a loser. He would always say stupid things to me like, you want to go to a meeting with us up in Los Angeles tomorrow night? No. What I wanted to say was, I can't care for you jerks here. Why would I drive 100 miles to meet some more of you? You know? But I would just say, no, thank you. But he just irritated the hell out of me. He used to come by on Saturday morning right after I'd been puking, and I'd go out to get the paper, and he would drive up in his little Oceanside electric truck and say, how you doing, Cliff? Do you ever try to carry that off? Oh, pretty well, Bill. Thank you, you know. And he just annoyed the hell out of me. I'm a functioning alcoholic. A lot of you people here tonight, you probably think you don't belong here. I certainly didn't think I belonged here because I'm a functioning alcoholic. I'm not one of these winos lying around on a skid row bench, for God's sakes. I'm a goer and a doer and an achiever. I'm a functioning alcoholic. My buddy at home says a functioning alcoholic is one whose wife works. Don't tell that in an Al-Anon meeting. No, no, no. That does not amuse them. Makes them go. You married guys, you remember that? Don't you think you had a few too many? I always said, you had a few too few. That's your problem, lady. Have a couple and loosen up, for God's sakes. Mine was a counter. They're the worst kind, huh? That's your fifth one today. Shut up and eat your breakfast, will you? Leave me the hell alone. If you're new tonight, the week I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, this time, I weighed 163 pounds. I had 4% body fat. I know because I used to measure it all the time. I used to surf for like 3 hours and then get out and run 5 miles. I could bench press 285 pounds. Took me 25 minutes to pass a mirror. For God's sakes, don't ask me for directions. I'd say it's right over there. My daughters used to get money from me all the time. They waited till I didn't have a shirt on, which was most of the time. And they'd come up and say, oh, V up for me, Daddy, V up. They'd go, oh, can I have $5? Yeah, sure. Yeah. I was 2 years sober before I figured that out. I was one of the top three debate coaches in the United States. That's an honor roughly equivalent to being one of the top three prostitutes in Elko, Nevada. I became a top debate coach by mistake. The principal had called me in one day and wanted me to take some kids down to this debate tournament down in San Diego, at San Diego State, 30 miles away. So I was in big trouble, so I said, sure, I'd love to. You know, and I took these six dodos down there. And we got to this debate and speech tournament down at San Diego State College. We were amazed. There were like 50 schools participating in this, maybe 100, 500 contestants. All the boys were in three-piece suits and vests and ties. And we're in Levi's. What the hell do we know? And they killed us. They slaughtered us. We did not win a round. I mean, they ground us in the goddamn dirt, what they did. I don't know about you, but I don't care for losing. I'm a typical alcoholic. It ticks me off to lose. And I went in the coach's room. There were about 20 of them in the coach's room. And they're buddies, they're pals. They've been doing this for years. And they snubbed me. It seemed to me. So I hung around all day. They could snub you longer that way. And one guy really pissed me off. He had a lot of hair. That bothered me right away. No, not just hair, but I mean that steel gray, gorgeous, 9 barbers to get it right. He had about $1,000 suit on. The other coaches did this when they went in front of him. About 2 in the afternoon, this gray-haired Cretan suddenly turns to me. He says, where are you from? God, I was grateful to be spoken to. I said, Oceanside. And he said, oh, where's that? 30 miles up the road. Where's that? I don't know what kind of drunk you are, but he gave me a resentment. And I went back to Oceanside High, and I built me a speech team. I built a juggernaut speech team is what I did. I built a powerhouse speech team, and I did it with sheer hatred. Took me 4 or 5 years. Every night, from 7 in the morning till 9:30, 10 o'clock, every night, I'm in their faces screaming and yelling, coaching! Guy next door said, I'd love to watch them leaving your room wiping the spit off their glasses. You know. The reporter said to my captain, what's the secret of your coach's success? The kid said, terror. She wasn't lying. Do you know how hard that is to make 150 people do what they don't want to do? I mean, you've got to stay at it all day from 7 in the morning till 9:30 at night. And I don't take a drink all day. I'm a functioning alcoholic. I don't touch a thing. Out in the glove compartment of the car is a half a pint of hot vodka, seal unbroken, lying in that glove compartment calling to me all day. Go get him, Cliff, baby. I'm waiting, darling. And I'm screaming and yelling. I drink maybe 400 cups of coffee all day. And I don't eat a thing all day. It's better that way, huh? And I stay pissed off. So by the end of the day, the nerves are hanging out the end of my fingers about that far. My brain's too big for my head. Every muscle in my body's in a knot. And that last kid says, good night, Nerve Roach. Yeah, get the hell out of here. I'd lurch out to the car, and I'd open up that half a pint of hot vodka, huh? Oh, hot vodka. I love to talk about hot vodka at Al-Anon meetings. They go, yeah, ooh, yeah. But we know. I would open up that hot vodka and I'd light one of those cheap stogies I smoked in those days. And I always drank half the half pint. Didn't you? Just. Oh, and that hot vodka gets in the bloodstream, huh? The nerves go back in my fingers. Brain subsides and the muscles relax. I sit there in the darkness of that 68 Chevy and I'd say, damn, you're a good coach. And I'd finish that half a pint and sit there in the darkness of my car. And I'd have my 8 minutes. I don't know what your story is. This is my story. After I drink about a half an hour, something happens to me. And I have about 8 minutes where everything in my life is all right, where there's nothing wrong with me for about 8 minutes. I am enough for about 8 minutes. And I almost died for that 8 minutes. If you would have stopped me on the street and said, "What's serenity?" I would have said it's about 8 minutes, 40 minutes into my drink. Because I don't know about you, but that's the only peace of mind I had ever known and was probably ever to know. And I would sit there in the darkness of that car and have that 8 minutes. And you know, all these 5 years that I was in and out of AA when I was a loser, I never once told you about the 8 minutes, not once. And after I'd have my 8 minutes, I'd start up that Chevy and I'd drive home and really start drinking. And we had these five kids. In the last 7 or 8 years I drank at home every night. And I'm a violent, violent alcoholic and a foul-mouthed, miserable, sarcastic, cruel, sadistic drunk. And I got drunk every night at home. And I turned that house into an insane asylum. Everybody in that house was crazy. No human power could have relieved my family. Three of my kids were in high school. We're talking the late 60s now. Three of them are in high school. My oldest son is working his way through high school as a hashish salesman. Never had to give him any spending money, I'll guarantee you. I used to hit him up for a fifth about once a week. "Yeah, Dad, what do you need?" He had hair down to his butt. You know, his head went like this all the time. Called his mother, "Man." "Hey, man, what's for dinner?" Well, he was a piece of work, that guy, I'll tell you. He loved LSD. You know, when they see things, those guys. I'd be right in the middle of a sentence. "What was that?" Of course, the shape I'm in, I don't know. "What was it? Where? What?" My drunken mother-in-law lived with us, and she would say, "I'll explain it." My wife and I got to laugh, and we used to listen to the explanation. We were thinking about that a couple of weeks ago. We used to listen to the explanation. Oh, my son and his buddies, they were something, I'll tell you. They were a delight. Did you ever watch somebody on acid play ping pong? Without a ball. And everybody in that house was crazy. But I built that speech team, by God. It took me several years, but after a couple of years, we won one of those speech tournaments. But I didn't say anything to that gray-haired guy. It wasn't time yet. We know when it's time, don't we? I think revenge is better than Christmas. The next year, there were like 12 tournaments. My team took first place in all 12. The next year, there was a tournament. There were 25 schools competing in the tournament. And my team scored more sweepstakes points than the other 24 schools combined. Then I went up to that gray-haired guy. Remember him? I said, "Do you know where Oceanside is now?" And he just looked blank. He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Don't you remember 4 or 5 years ago, you said to me, 'Oceanside, where's that?'" And he said, "We just moved here from Nebraska. I didn't know where it was." The story of my goddamn life. This guy's in his bed every night for 4 or 5 years. I'm up at Oceanside. "I'll get you." He didn't even know it. Right after that, my wife and I had one of our main events, which the neighbors have come to miss so much. Our neighbors never got television until after I got sober. We were always the entertainment for the neighborhood, weren't you? Oh, he's coming back. He's coming back. They all had those Venetian blind marks on their forehead, you know, from watching. But that night we had one of our real Donnybrook, and I threatened to move out, and everybody said, yay, go for it. And I moved out, and I'm living down at the beach where I wanted to live anyway. I had said for years, if I get rid of that witch and those long-haired, dope-fiend children, I'd be okay. And it wasn't working. I was drunk all the time, missing work, which I'd never done. That was my red badge of courage. Any other non-work, you know, no-miss-work type drunks here tonight? By the way, the experts on alcoholism, whoever they are, they say that 95 to 97% of us who die of the disease of alcohol, who become dead from the disease of alcoholism, are functioning alcoholics like me. Guys who get up every day and go to work and do the job and come home and get bombed every night and get up tomorrow and puke and go back and do it again. We're the ones who die, see, because we think we're okay. But anyway, I went by the house one afternoon. I was haranguing my wife about money, and the hashish salesman was kind of bobbing in the background there, and humming a tune from the planet Pluto, I think. And I turned to him and I said, Dave, what's it like not to have your old man around the house? And my son looked me right in the eye and he said, it's beautiful. And I'm standing here a little over 37 years sober tonight because of the courage of a 16-year-old kid. My son had every reason to be afraid of me, much more reason to be afraid of me than any of the other kids, because I had hurt him physically a lot. But my brown-eyed son looked me right in the eye, 16 years old, and said it was beautiful not to have me around. And that's my bottom. I didn't know it for a couple hours, but that's as far as I'm going. Kind of a weenie bottom, but what are you going to do, you know? If I'd known I was going to be giving talks, I'd have gone to death row or something, you know. But anyway, I went back to that dump on the beach and ran and raved and sniveled and whined, but I did not take a drink that afternoon, and I watched what was still to this day the most beautiful sunset that I ever saw. And about the time the sun was going down into the water, I had what I assume you had, whether you be AA or Al-Anon, I had that moment of clarity our big book talks about. My friend Polly calls it the moment of grace, the gift. Because it's all just a gift, isn't it? Just a gift. And I went in the bedroom and dug out the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I read it for 3 days and three nights. I called in sick. I didn't go to work. And I read the big book, if you're new. I read it cover to cover. I read every story. I read the appendix in the back. On the third time through the book, on the 13th of January, 1970, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I was on page 63 again. And if you're new, on page 63, there's a little prayer. And the prayer is step 3. I've always called it the formal terms of surrender. And I knelt down on that filthy linoleum floor on that dump on the beach where I was living, and I read the third prayer out loud to myself. I read, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self. And I've heard maybe 200 fifth steps in my years in the program. And the number one defect of character of every man I've ever worked with is self-obsession. And before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, when I was 4 years old, I had built this wall, I guess. I guess to keep you out. I don't know what the hell for. But all I did was build a prison to keep me in. And when I was new, Peggy Martin said, alcoholism is the only prison where the locks are on the inside. And I heard that. My little sponsor said, we got 12 keys to let you out, Cliff. And because you're a brilliant intellectual, we numbered them for you. 1, 2. And I had a spiritual awakening on my knees there that morning. Something happened to me, and for maybe 32 years, I tried to tell you what happened to me on my knees that morning. And about 3 or 4 years ago, this little gal in the Grapevine, she was 17 when she surrendered, and she's like 25 now. But in this little Grapevine article, she wrote, she was in a treatment center, and she did exactly what I had done 32 years before. She knelt down and read the third step prayer out loud to herself. And in the article, she said, I was engulfed by a great laughing love. That'll do it for me, friends. I was engulfed by a great laughing love. And that night I was at Bill Blake's house. This little guy I told you about, the one that pissed me off all the time. He was 8 years sober at the time. An AA fanatic, you know the type. I'm knocking on the door. 5-year loser, overeducated, pompous, ass, smirking loser. And Margie, Bill's wife, opened the door, and here I am on the porch. Are you new tonight? Listen, I have never seen anyone so glad to see me in my life. This loser. That lady saw me, she just lit up. Oh, Cliff, she said. Oh, Cliff. In the house I go. Pours me a cup of coffee. She said, Bill's been crazy lately. He's had nobody to work with. This is so great. Oh, and then Bill comes in. Ah, Cliff. About a half an hour, I'm thinking, anything else I do to help you folks out, you know. Cliff's here. We can start AA now, you know. But, you know, I was in a meeting with newcomers a couple of weeks later, and one of the other newcomers says, what do you mean this is a selfish program? And when the guy asked the question, I knew the answer. You can't stay here unless you're willing to give it away. You can't get this thing unless you're willing to give it away. And how you give it away is your business. Those sweethearts that met us at the door tonight and greeted us, they know what I'm talking about. And the people who set this meeting up made the coffee. And the ones who clean up after we're through here tonight, they know what I'm talking about. My little sponsor was the worst speaker in the history of AA. He was awful. He never got out of World War II. But you put him in the front seat of a car with a newcomer. He was magic. No one ever escaped him, ever. And I love to watch people giving it away in AA. I love to watch the people who know what I'm talking about here. And he took me to a meeting every night for 2 years. He took me to a meeting every night for the next 2 years. First it was just he and I, and then Skip came along, and Al came along, and the other Al, and Bernie, and Bob. Pretty soon we had 3 carloads of guys. We're going everywhere in Southern California. He took me to meetings like this one. He took me to meetings where people were laughing. I'm sorry, I can't live without the laughter. I couldn't stay here unless we're laughing. I'm sorry. I sponsor guys, love those gray tunnel meetings. They love them, you know, where the 6 guys sit around the table and stay sober. You don't have to have hemorrhoids real bad to get the expression right. Sobriety's like this long, gray tunnel, and you trudge. Every year, a trapdoor opens and a cake comes down. I'm going to where they're laughing, folks. I'm sorry. Laughter is what heals us here. Laughter is what heals us here. Nothing I laugh at will ever come back and haunt me again. The stuff I used to lie awake all night, my teeth grinding, my stomach turning. It's funny now, and the hell with it. Nothing I laugh at will ever come back and haunt me again. And if you're new and you're having trouble laughing at yourself, see me after the meeting. I'll try to help you out as best I can. I had to get me some new guy, you know, and take him to a meeting, take him to another meeting, take him to another meeting. Maybe the 12th or 13th or 14th meeting, he's sitting beside me and he goes, Oh, my Al-Anon wife, we get these brand new little Al-Anons, and we take them to speaker meetings like this, AA speaker meetings, and get her in between us where she can't escape. And the AA's up here and says, I fell on the Christmas tree and smashed all the presents. You know, we all go, yeah. And this new little Al-Anon sitting there. Not funny to her. So So we take her to another meeting tomorrow night, and I don't care, A or Al, not either one. Once we get you laughing, we gotcha. Because you know you belong here once you start laughing. You know you belong here when you hear the laughter in your heart. And whatever was wrong in my life, he made me do something that had nothing to do with what was wrong in my life. He made me do stupid things, now that I look back and on it. He made me do things to help you, which seemed to me to be stupid things at the time. You know, I had these kids on drugs, and my wife wouldn't go to Al-Anon, and I owed $1 billion, and I didn't have a brass razoo, and I had a lot of nervous breakdowns. So when I'd go and cry to my sponsor, weep, and tell him what's going on, you know what's going on. He would let me run down finally, and he would say, go get Al and take him to the meeting. What the hell has that got to do with the nervous? As I asked the guy, what time is it? The horse is dead. But lucky for me, I surrendered on my knees that morning, so I'd go get Al, whom I despised. He was a 10-year loser. I was only a 5-year loser. And he had no license, of course. So I'd drive the blowhard to the meeting, blah, 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 blah. We'd set the meeting up, make the coffee, everybody come, everybody go home. We'd set the meeting down, wash the car, load Al in the car, drive him home, blah, 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 blah. And I'd start driving home. I'd let Al off, and I'd start driving home, and this feeling would come over me. It would start right here, and then would just like spread out. Oh, my God, it felt so good. It terrified me. Only lasted 40 seconds. I thought it's because I got rid of Al. But then he made me stand at the door and greet people, which I hated. And he took me on all these 12-step calls. And Kim was talking about this. And you get to see the light come on in another human being's eyes. Now, I don't know how many hundred times I've had this experience. Hundreds and hundreds of times. Go to some dirty, filthy place and find some dirty, filthy guy. When I get there, first thing I always do is get right down and look at his eyes. And I see the emptiness there and the lack of hope there. And get him to a meeting. After the meeting, take him to a coffee shop. And hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of times, look across the table and the power is in his eyes. That night, I sponsor a guy sober 33 years. And I got to watch the light happen in his eyes. If you don't believe in a higher power, you have to do that at least once if you're going to believe in a higher power. So everything he told me to do I thought was stupid and ridiculous. It was until years later I realized what he was doing was making me be of service to you. You know, in our area, Mother Teresa was there a number of years ago, and she had a heart attack. And a couple of buddies of mine who were cardiologists took care of her. And they said you had to be in a room with her to know how spiritual she was. But this reporter asked her something, and she gave him the answer. It was in the paper, and I cut it out and carried it with me until it fell apart. She said, the fruit of faith is love, and the fruit of love is service, and the fruit of service is peace. I will comprehend the word serenity, and I will know peace. And the fruit of service is peace. Bob and I were talking about that coming from the airport. To see a guy that I did a 12-step call on 10 years or 15 or 5 years ago, see him giving a cake to a guy who he sponsors. That's a new freedom and a new happiness. Because I'd hate to even tell you what I thought freedom and happiness was when I came here. And it had nothing to do with service, I'll guarantee you. Oh, you serve me. Yes, that's true. Really, but anyway, you know, and so whatever happened in my life, he gave me something ridiculous to do, and then I did it, and my life changed. Plus, we had to do the steps. We had to do the steps until he was satisfied, not till what I was satisfied. And if you're new tonight, that's the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, 1 through 12. That's the program. All the rest of it is just fun and games. And I love it. I love the fellowship. But the program is 1 through 12. So if you're going to be a member of AA, you have to do the program. And by the way, my wife and my eldest daughter, Kitty, are both strong Al-Anons. And two greater examples of the program I have never seen. They have worked the 12 steps of the program and changed their lives. And all the guys that I've sponsored through the years have changed their lives. Unbelievable. Well, my sponsor got me into formal service after I was 2 years sober. I had to be a GSR and then a DCM. I did the whole damn alphabet. Ended up being the delegate for our area in panel 26. And my buddies that I got sober with, they were doing other stuff, H&I and stuff. They used to tease me. They used to say, here comes the AA politician. Yeah, why do you do that? Politics, Cliff. And I used to say to my buddies way back then, I used to say, I do this because I want AA to be here for my kids if they need it. And I want it to be AA. I don't want it to be some watered-down, psychologized bullshit. I want it to be the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. The program that little electrician gave to me. And now here it is all these years later. My youngest son, Chris, has 19 years of sobriety. My middle daughter, Jan, had 12 years of sobriety and started taking pills. And I have no opinion on pills. They'll cut you off in the sunlight of the Spirit and kill your ass dead, but I have no opinion on them whatsoever. No opinion at all. And of course, she drank again, and now she has 6 years again now. And she goes to my home group, sits right behind me, so I don't miss anything. The hashish salesman has over 6 years. Yeah. He's one of the foremost experts in the world on the growing of coffee. Beats the hell out of the stuff he used to grow. And he goes everywhere in the world. He goes to third world countries, you know, and he does the soil analysis and the plant analysis and then decides what other coffee plants to bring in so they don't have to be third world countries anymore. Then volunteers follow him in and help him do that. And he goes to meetings all over South America and Central America. He speaks Spanish fluently. So he goes to meetings in Mexico, Central America. And one of his favorite meetings is in Zambia, Africa. He gets over there about nine times a year, and they look forward to him because it's a real small meeting in the Canadian consulate. And that's his second favorite. His home group is in the state of Washington. And Bob's going to go up and talk at his little deal up there, and he's going to be your host. Poor devil. Something I want to tell you about. I forgot. Anyway, he's got over 6 years of sobriety now. And as I said, the one daughter went wrong, the eldest daughter, she's been in Al-Anon about 20 years now. She said, well, when I drink too much, I get sick. My youngest son said, you can get by that. She says, why do I feel like a failure in this family? And we all got together at Christmas. And I think back about that insanity. I think about that crazy place where everybody hated everybody else and everybody was crazy. We get together now, you can cut the love in that room with a knife, and oh my God, the laughter. Oh my God, the laughter. I remember when, a few years ago, my wife looked across the room at me, and she says, how do we get here from there? Al-Anon and the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. So if you're new tonight, you don't have to believe that all the great things that have happened to me and mine are going to happen to you. I didn't believe they were going to happen to me when I was new. I believe they happened to Bill. And that kept me in a car for the first year. So you don't have to believe that it's going to happen to you. But you do have to believe that it happened to me. A sick, neurotic, angry, violent man lives almost every day of his life just like the book promised me I would. Happy and joyous and free, and that's how I live. And I hope you do too.